When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you got the notion,
but I swear it was in self-defense.
Simon Levy hold a roller stone and send a folder. Johnny Cash and Johnny Rivers cast, and now I got the shivers.
He did say.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast. The year is 1974. I'm Aaron Camaro, there's Chris Sinzak, and we are more than happy to rock and roll you back in time once again today.
How's it going?
It's going fantastic, man. I'm so excited. We're back for 1974 Part 2. So much good music came out this year, and now we're getting into the second half of it.
Yeah, it's like a disco inferno in here.
It's an inferno in here, all right.
No
I don't
disco,
know.
Though.
I don't know about disco.
We'll put the disco on the side.
Okay, good.
So
keep it there.
We took a week off in between to do a cool interview with our friend Greg Mangus last week, but we also wanted to put in the work and get all of our facts straight and some cool information and spin some cool tunes for you
today.
Yeah,
that's the thing about the year in reviews, especially the fact that, you know, you really have to know your stuff. Because we can't just come off as a couple of idiots going, yeah, that was cool, and this was cool, and that was awesome,
that's
and
every
this
other
sucked.
Week.
And, you know, not, we can't do that all the time. So when we do year in reviews, we really try to do right by you guys, make it educational and entertaining at the same time.
And we got a lot of facts, pop culture, songs, and news stories for this thing. And, of course, classic commercials, as always.
Heck, yeah.
But a special thing that Aaron's going to kick off the show with.
Holy
this
moly,
week.
This is, oh, man. You guys get ready to have your minds blown by what could quite possibly be the greatest iTunes review of all time.
It's possible.
Obviously, I'm telling you about it because it's 5 stars. It came to us from Chief Broken Arrow from right here in the USA, and it goes a little something. Whew, better get a breath for this one.
I'm going to have a beer.
Like this. I sure know something. If you want to rock and roll all night and feel like a hooligan on a rocket ride, I want you to listen to the Decibel Geek. Decibel Geek is not for the innocent, and they shock me every episode. They have cool segments like Radio Sucks, Year in Review, and of course my favorite, Kissmas in July. I love it loud, and I will be there for every episode. I hope it never goes away. Take a swig of cold gin and raise your glasses to Chris and Aaron. Chris, the God of Thunder. Aaron, the King of the Nighttime World. Our killer, larger-than-life hosts. They have charisma and the magic touch that makes for terrific podcast hosts. And you know they do it all for the love of rock and roll. Other podcasts make me feel like I'm somewhere between heaven and hell. And I feel a little unholy, like the devil is me. So when I feel like heaven's on fire and all hell's breaking loose, I crank Decibel Geek and they drag me out of that rock and roll hell and make me feel like an all-American man again.
This is genius.
Whether you are a freak, almost human, young and wasted, secretly cruel, or even a good girl gone bad who is murdering high heels, after you listen to Decibel Geek, you will say yeah and give me more. You will stand up, put your hand on your heart of chrome, and scream, I pledge allegiance to the state of rock and roll. I told all my crazy friends, Little Caesar, Mr. Blackwell, and Mr. Speed, about Decibel Geek, and now they know what makes the world go round. Decibel Geek gives them a reason to live and makes them cry out, I'm alive. I confess, I even got my wife to listen to Decibel Geek. I'd do anything for my baby and love her all I can. So one night I told her to listen to Decibel Geek, and she said she had great expectations for the podcast and told me that tomorrow and tonight, while the city sleeps, she would listen. The next morning, she exclaimed that Decibel Geek gave her thrills in the night. She looked at me and she said, "You're all that I want. Come on and love me." "She's so European," I replied. "I was made for loving you." Then she kissed me. Ah, kissing time. I felt like the king of the mountain. So tell everyone rocking in the USA about Decibel Geek. Shout it out loud to all the creatures of the night having crazy, crazy nights. Tell the flaming youth in the naked city that Chris and Aaron are the best. Tell all the ladies in waiting in the ladies' room, Shandy, Beth, even that modern-day Delilah, Christine 16, that Decibel Geek is hotter than hell. Any way you slice it, Decibel Geek is out of this world and a million to one, so give them a listen. You got nothing to lose. I hope this podcast lasts forever, or at least 100,000 years.
Mic drop.
Boom.
That's amazing.
I'm telling you, that may be the greatest iTunes review ever left for anything.
It's certainly my favorite of all time.
Wow.
That is so cool. Chief Broken Arrow.
All hail the Chief.
As I say, we bow down to you for your iTunes review. That was
freaking
incredible. Awesome. Get in
Love
touch
it.
With us on Facebook. I want to know who you really are.
Yeah, man. That's great.
Yeah. Seriously, that's an amazing iTunes review. All right. So now the challenge is out there. Top that.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, so fantastic, man. What a great way to start the show, and a great way to continue it is to acknowledge our people. There are people out there in the streets spreading the word about Decibel Geek Podcast.
Basically, if you want to be a Geek of the Week, if you're new to the show, share on Facebook or retweet on Twitter the link that we post to this episode. Do that, and I'll mention your name on the show next week. It's as simple as that. I'll make you famous, or at least podcast famous. People that shared last week's episode with Greg Mangus, that was such a fun talk.
Had so many
great stories, and look forward to having Greg back on again with that bottle of whiskey.
Heck yeah, we're looking forward to it.
All right, so Geeks of the Week this week are Anthony Visconti, Joe Lascon, Joe Mama's Wrestling Podcast, Aaron Baker, Brent Tibbetts, Paul Korn, Brent Cattell, Brad Schick, Paul Watson, Wayne Cross, Shane Hebert, Anthony Britt, Mark Alden Taylor, Adam Cox, Brian Knapp, Andrew Jacobs, Mikel Burrell, Trevor McDougal, Greg McGlone, Tom Smoke, Ernesto Aguiar, Daniel Lee, and the TJE Podcast.
Heck yeah, those are our people helping us spread the word. All you got to do to become a Geek of the Week is retweet or share when we post this one, 1974 Part 2. Get out there, share it, retweet it, and then next week you become a Geek of the Week. Yep. We love you for it. It's a beautiful thing. Are you ready
to
go back to 74 right now?
I got my bell bottoms on. Let's go.
You sure do, and they look fantastic. Awesome. Let's start things out this week with the births and the deaths of 1974. So these are the most famous ones that I could come up with.
Okay.
For deaths in 1974, Mama Cass. Not from a chicken bone or a ham sandwich.
That's one of the most tasteless.
That's like
celebrity liners I ever did for the show. Do you remember that one?
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't put it in right here. But you're going to say that it's not real.
Tasteless. It's not good.
So that's
either.
Not how it went down.
No, she didn't die. I mean, that's crazy to me because this whole time before we did the research for this, I had no idea. I always assumed that she choked on a chicken bone.
That's what I thought.
And then they said that the rumor was actually ham sandwich, but neither won the case.
What was it?
Heart attack.
Just a heart attack.
Yeah, just had a heart attack and died.
She may have eaten a ham sandwich earlier in the day.
Well, that may be. And a chicken bone.
And a chicken bone. She would eat a chicken bone.
I hope not. In either case, you know, speaking of food, also passed away in 1974, Tim Horton.
The coffee guy.
Not the coffee guy, the restaurant guy.
Isn't it Tim Horton's a famous coffee chain in Canada, right?
But I thought it was also like a restaurant in the United States.
The only Tim Hortons I know of is the Canadian coffee chain.
Okay, well, maybe that's what it is. But he was also a famous hockey player.
Oh, was he?
And he was still playing hockey when he died in 1974 in a car accident.
See, I didn't know he was
so all that
player.
Really took off after him, but the name lives on. Tim Hortons, most people know about it.
They're like the Canadian Starbucks.
Yeah, right on. Well, there you guys go. Don't you know?
A lot of Canadian listeners, let us know. What do you think of Tim Hortons?
Also passed away in 1974, Buford Pusser.
Oh, Walking Tall.
Yeah. Duke Ellington dies in 1974.
Yep.
If nothing else, he should be remembered for having one of the coolest names ever.
It is a cool name.
Duke Ellington. I would just say that to somebody and be like, we don't want to fight you.
Panties
Why?
Would drop the minute you
yeah,
say that
yeah.
name.
Panties would drop. People that wanted to beat you up would run away. Yeah. Duke Ellington. And, of course, in 1974, we also lost Ed Sullivan.
That's true.
Which is a huge part of music history, you know.
He died kind of young, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
he
before his
old.
Time. So then that brings us to births of 1974. You know, we got the ladies like Jewel and Lil' Kim and Alanis Morissette and, yoosh, not so hot, Sporty Spice. Yeah, 74 is kind of tough. In sports, guys, we got the juniors. We got Dale Earnhardt Jr., Rey Mysterio Jr., both born in 1974.
Always a wrestling time.
Derek Jeter, Kimbo Slice. Actors.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio and Christian Bale.
Pretty good actors.
Better actors. David Faustino.
Better
actors. And Seth Green.
David Faustino.
Man, David Faustino is way better actor than Leonardo DiCaprio and should be getting way better roles than that guy, I think.
Delusional, party of one, your table's ready.
Bud freaking Bundy, man.
I like Bud Bundy, but let's not put him up in Academy Award.
Okay,
Jared,
well, here's one for you. In rock and roll births of 1974, Chad Kroeger from Nickelback.
Yeah, I saw that.
Was born in 74, but to counter that, in rock and roll, born in 1974, Ian Wadley.
Well done.
Ian Wadley, born in 1974.
I'll take Ian Wadley over Chad Kroeger any day.
Cancels out Chad Kroeger. The beauty of it all. So, I guess it's time to get into the rock and roll of 1974. So, I'm going to start things off this week and tell you about a band that is a little bit past their prime in 1974. Their heyday is a little ways behind them.
Mm.
Now, by this time, this band I'm talking about, they're Mountain. We've yeah. talked about Mountain before. They've gone through numerous lineup changes and even broken up once already. But they're back in 74. The return of their longtime drummer, Corky Laing. He replaces Alan Schwartzberg.
Oh, yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
Big Kiss tie-in.
There's your first Kiss tie-in of the show right there. Alan Schwartzberg, you Kiss fans know him. Although it's not Mountain's most popular album, it still has some pretty great tracks on it. It's the only album that features the guitar playing of Dave Perry, and I mean, that dude is pretty rocking. I don't know how many people have heard of him, but this album, his guitar playing is pretty awesome on it. 1974's Avalanche would be Mountain's last album for 11 years.
Really?
Yeah, this was the down of Mountain.
Yeah.
You know, they had, because Mountain came out strong because
yeah.
their debut album had Mississippi Queen on
oh,
it.
Absolutely.
So they were firing on that first
yeah.
album, and then it was
but
just kind of.
They never really repeated it.
No, it was just kind of downhill from
good,
there.
They would have good songs, but not necessarily great full albums. And this
right.
one is no exception because.
Right, because there is some kind of
well,
funny stuff on this album.
There's covers on here.
Yeah,
and then, like,
Rolling Stones covers.
Well, the thing. I sent you my initial list of songs, which
yeah.
had a Mountain song on there, and
thumb
then you
sucker.
Sent back, yeah,
but
I wanted Thumbsucker, and then you
but
stole it.
But then it was too late.
But I love
I'd already
Thumbsucker,
done the research.
And I love you better believe it.
Yeah.
But it's got stuff on there where, like, even the covers are weak compared to the original.
Yeah.
So
like, if you're going to do a cover of
yeah.
a band, you got to try to outdo it, you
yeah.
know, blow it away, make it your own. But yeah, it's just.
Yeah, they were a little lost at that
Mountain
point.
Was having a tough time in 1974 and were on their way pretty much out. I only think they came out with like two more albums after
yeah,
that,
I think
if
so.
That.
But
they're always like 10 years in between.
Leslie West is a killer guitar player.
You want a quick fun fact about Mountain before we move on?
Yeah.
Over the years, both Noel Redding famous from Jimi Hendrix, yeah, and Richie Scarlett, famous from the Ace Frehley Band, mm-hmm, have both been members of Mountain.
No kidding.
Over the years,
I did not know that.
Look it up, people.
Although they've been touring the entire time, so yeah, that makes sense.
In different versions.
Okay, so a really interesting music festival took place on July 19th through the 21st.
Oh, man, to be there.
Listen, this is, I got to read this. Thank you, Wikipedia, because otherwise I'd never would have gotten all these facts. The Ozark Music Festival took place.
Oh, man, one of the greatest of all time.
It's one of the largest music festivals in history. It took place on the Missouri State Fairgrounds in Sedalia, Missouri, and I know exactly where that is.
Yeah.
I used to live in Missouri. It's out in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah, because that's just a little bitty town, right?
It's real small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it got bombarded.
From Kansas City, it's basically farmland is what it is.
Yeah.
Promoted the festival, assured officials from the Missouri Department of Agriculture and the Sedalia Chamber of Commerce that the three-day weekend event would be a bluegrass and pop rock festival with no more than 50,000 tickets sold.
Ha, ha, ha.
Wrong. Even though the festival was not scheduled to start until Friday, July 19th, thousands had arrived by Thursday night, and there was a steady line of cars, trucks, vans, hitchhikers, and even an occasional hippie camper slowly winding towards Sedalia and the fairgrounds.
Oh, man. Those poor people in that little country town.
While in line, festival goers were advised once inside the grounds, vehicles would not be allowed back outside the festival until the festival was over. Many left a vehicle outside the fence for beer runs.
Yeah.
Wolfman Jack, the beloved DJ, heard about the size of the crowd and flew in from Chicago by helicopter.
Nice.
Some estimates put the attendance at 350,000 people.
Holy shit, that's 300,000 more than they expected.
Over a quarter of a million people in Sedalia, Missouri.
But the lineup, man. The lineup.
Okay. And this is just a part of the lineup. Includes Aerosmith, BTO, Ted Nugent, The Eagles, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Bob Seger, Joe Walsh, the Ozark Mountain Daredevils, Jefferson Starship, and REO Speedwagon.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg, because this was a three-day weekend.
Yeah, there's tons
of
people.
There's videos on YouTube of this they go back and show, because I watched some of this, like gearing
like
up for this.
Home movies and stuff?
Home movies and news reports, and just insanity. If you can imagine just a little bitty farm town, which I can easily imagine, because I pretty much grew up in one.
Yeah.
And then have a concert set up where, like, almost, you know, like you said, so many people.
Oh, if you drive to Sedalia, you'd be like, that happened here?
Right.
What the fuck?
Like, there was more people than there were acreage there,
easily,
you know?
Yeah.
So there was no way. And they said it was the greatest disaster ever. The town was pissed because the whole town pretty much got destroyed.
Oh, had to have.
You know?
With that many people.
It was just a fiasco. And to this day in Sedalia, they say it's the worst disaster that ever happened in that town.
Yeah, it must have been a complete mess after it was over with.
Like, no tornado or anything like that could ever touch the damage of the Ozark Music Festival.
And that was just the Aerosmith backstage area.
But man, yeah, no kidding. But man, to be there for that, I would take being there over Woodstock any day.
That's a time machine
74,
concert.
That and California Jam.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome
which we
concerts.
Talked about on the last episode, yeah.
Awesome concerts in 74. Historical.
Festivals were amazing back in those days.
Yeah.
So July 29th was kind of a landmark thing if you're a Rush fan. Neil Peart officially joins the band.
Yeah, changes the whole trajectory of what Rush was and what they would become.
I got to say, although you and I both prefer that first album, because it's more straight-ahead hard rock,
right.
If you really look at Rush, had they continued that route, they probably would have been a middle-of-the-pack hard rock band.
Right in there with like REO Speedwagon.
Neil Peart made them unique and made them prog rock legends, basically.
Right,
so,
sure.
I mean, it was the right move.
Oh, absolutely it was. Yeah, totally. All right, you know, talking about more bands, you know, on August, like brings us into August, Joan Jett meets Kim Fowley and they form the Runaways.
Yep.
And also in August of 74, the Ramones are performing their first show at CBGB's.
Yep, August 16th.
So, man, 74, what a year. All kinds of cool stuff going on.
Very cool. I have an eclectic mix of stuff because, you know, some of this stuff is like amazing songs that I love, and also there's good stories behind some of these picks, too, and that's the case with this one. T-Rex, I respect. I respect Mark Bolan for his place in music, and I do like a number of songs, but I never would really count myself as a diehard T-Rex fan.
No, but man, he had some good hooks and some good
riffs.
He
knew how to write. Yeah. And so 74 was an interesting year for Mark and T-Rex because he put out Light of Love in August. I don't know exact date, but it's a U.S.-only album that was released by them in 74.
Well, that's weird. You would think T-Rex would be huger in the U.K. at
well,
his time.
We'll get to that. It's composed of three tracks previously unreleased in the UK on the album that came out before earlier in the year called Zinc Alloy and the Hidden Riders of Tomorrow.
Okay.
Mark Bolan was known for really simple song album titles. Together with eight songs that were recorded in the spring of 74 in Music Recorders Inc. Studios in Hollywood. And those would later appear on the next album, which was called Bolan Zip Gun. Which, that album's really good. The album was engineered by Gary Ulmer, who was in place of the absent Tony Visconti, who'd actually had done all of T-Rex's stuff up to that point. And it was produced by Mark Bolan himself. The newly recorded songs were licensed by Neil Bogart, who had just set up his Casablanca label.
Yeah.
Together with Teenage Dream, Explosive Mouth, and Venus Loon from the Zinc Alloy album. Despite considerable publicity and a U.S. tour, Light of Love did not chart in the United States.
Oh, wow.
The reasons are disputed, but it permanently ended Mark Bolan's attempts to gain stardom in the U.S. pop market. By this point, Bolan's USA record label Reprise Records had dropped him, and he had much difficulty finding a new label to sign him, but eventually signed to Casablanca. However, Casablanca was going bankrupt around the same time and couldn't find a label to sign him, resulting in this being the last album of the band's to be released in the United States. Interesting to note that Casablanca was going bankrupt in 74 around this time, which, if you're a Kiss fan, you know why. Because they were dumping loads of money into Kiss.
Right.
It was not selling records at the time.
Which is such a beautiful thing from a Kiss fan point of view, because you know that it really, truly came from a belief, you know, a belief in Kiss. Where you said, you know, we tried with T-Rex, it didn't quite work, but we're not giving up on Kiss.
Yeah.
You know, we know Kiss is going to break.
Well, and there was also the story, if you're a Kiss fan, you know this, they put all their eggs in a basket of a Johnny Carson vinyl album they did.
Right,
called, something like Here's Johnny Moments from the Tonight Show, where they thought that playing audio clips from a TV show would be a great idea.
And maybe in 2016 and call it a podcast.
Yeah, but the album completely stiffed and just about put Casablanca underground.
Hmm.
So that album was out around the time that this happened. So it's just, I like that Kiss tie-in because they were trying to help Mark Bolan kind of revive his career at the same time, but they had no money left.
And again, it shows the divide in 1974 over what's cool in the States versus what's cool in the UK and Europe. It's two very, very different things. Where T-Rex in Europe, perfect. You know, they're a glam band. Everybody's digging that stuff over there.
Yeah.
But then you got the like Southern rock, classic rock bands, as we call them today,
time,
in the
really.
States, that, you know, the UK don't want nothing to do with. And the vice versa, the US don't want nothing to do with a band like
T-Rex.
That
is interesting because of the glitter rock movement. You know, Bowie was able to bring that glitter rock thing to the U.S. with Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah.
And then it died out. And right around that time is when Southern rock got big, and then hard rock started getting big, too.
Yeah.
So you can see why Mark Bolan was probably like, what the fuck? I gotta go back to the U.K. now.
Right, because after David Bowie, then it became more blue-collar stuff, you know, hard work and rock and roll. That's what the people like. The Skinner, the Foghat, the Kiss,
Even Bowie abandoned the whole glitter thing.
Yeah, totally. All right, still in August here in the United States, huge news. A president has to resign. Yeah, talking about I'm not a crook, Richard Nixon.
Tricky Dick.
Yeah, he resigns. Gerald Ford is sworn in. I don't know all the details. None of it really rocks very much, but you know what does rock? One of the greatest bands to ever come out of Canada. I want to talk to you about Bachman Turner Overdrive, BTO. They are at the peak of their powers in 1974, and they're back with their third studio album, Not Fragile. Man, I love this album. It's kind of a poke at the light music of Yes, who had previously released an album called Fragile.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that.
So then BTO is like, well,
we're not fragile.
We got balls. We're not fragile. We're not like Yes. We're not fragile. Featuring the guitar duo of Randy Bachman and Blair Thornton, Bobby Bachman on drums, and C.F. Turner on bass and lead vocals, Not Fragile is one awesome album with songs like, of course, the huge hit, You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, Roll On Down the Highway,
Love that song.
And one of my all-time favorite guitar riffs, the title track. You know, of course, You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet was a huge number one hit single, number one in the U.S. and in Canada. Not bad for a song that wasn't even intended to make the album, huh?
That's true.
Yeah, it wasn't even supposed to be on there, but it became like their biggest song ever. This album totally stands the test of time as BTO's highest selling album, and still to this day, it sounds great. The whole album is really, really good. I love BTO. I just don't think they get enough credit. And as we already established, you know, in a little bit earlier and in part one, the UK, they don't give a shit about Bachman Turner Overdrive. No. I don't know. It's funny, man. You know, what side would you be on in 74, the UK or the US? I know I definitely would be on the side of the US.
I think I'd probably be a part of the UK because I was into the power pop movement.
Yeah.
You know? So, although I like both. I mean, I don't know. I'd probably be listening to both, but I guess power pop would probably rule out for me.
I think everybody should own Not Fragile by BTO.
It's a good record.
Oh, so good.
So before we go into break, I want to play my next pick. And it was by a four studio album by this space rock band, a band called Hawkwind. And this was their most critically acclaimed album. The title was a nod to Edvard Grieg's In the Hall of the Mountain King. The album was called Hall of the Mountain Grill. And
I was wondering if that was a typo.
No. It's a real title.
Okay, wow.
It was about a Portobello Road cafe called the Mountain Grill, which is now closed. It was frequented by the band in the early 1970s.
Okay, that makes sense now.
But yeah, as we go into break, this tune would later be recorded by Motorhead. But in 1974, it was a very early rare vocal by an unknown bassist named Lemmy Kilmister.
Lately, with this shortage, that shortage, I'm going through a money shortage.
I hear you.
That's not funny. So when I'm hungry, I head for the old Golden Arches. Example, I get a hamburger, regular fries, and Coca-Cola for less than a dollar. Thanks. Today, getting mileage out of my money is important, and at McDonald's, I do.
I believe it.
Besides, I'm a nut about French fries.
Spend Thursday nights with our guys.
10-4, Chopper 1.
Special cops who do their job in a special way. Chopper 1. The men of Engine Company 23. On call to save lives. Firehouse. Kane, the most unlikely hero the West has ever known. Kung Fu. Mike Stone. And Steve Keller. Putting things right on the streets of San Francisco. Every Thursday night on ABC.
All right. right, taking a quick break from our trip back in time to 1974. We got to gas up the DeLorean, check out the flux capacitor, and we'll get right back to it. But before we do, of course, as always, we want to thank everybody that supports the Decibel Geek Podcast. We know, obviously, there's people leaving us five-star iTunes reviews. We love you. Thank you. There's people that are sharing and retweeting our episodes every single week to become honored Geeks of the Week. Thank you. You know, there's people that go to HK Collectibles, Inc. Yeah, it's easy. There's a banner right at decibelgeek.com. All you got to do is click on it, and you're going to find all kinds of awesome stuff. Yep. Now, let me tell you about what he's got going on over there right now, because this is a little something for the KISS fans that I think everybody's really going to dig. Right now, over at HK Collectibles, Inc., this week, he's got tickets from the Animalize Tour in Indianapolis. He's got tickets from the Asylum Tour in Pittsburgh and in Knoxville, as well as Fraley's Comet ticket stub and a backstage pass from St. Louis in 1987. You tell me, where are you going to get this stuff?
That's pretty cool.
HK Collectibles, Inc. He's got it. You want a one-of-a-kind gift to give to an Ace Fraley fan? Look at that. Put that stuff in a frame.
Yep.
Give it to him. What's he going to say? Oh, man, I already got one of these.
No.
No, hell no, he ain't going to say that. He's going to say, holy shit, where did you get this? You're going to say, my boys at the Decibel Geek Podcast told me to go to HK Collectibles, Inc., and that's where I got it. And happy birthday. And so you turn around, you look at everybody else, say, top that.
That's right.
Good luck. Just like our iTunes review.
Absolutely.
We thank everybody that supports HK Collectibles because we're good friends with Daryl Alber. We like what he's doing over there. He has stuff in his store that is perfectly made for the people that listen to the show. So it goes hand in hand beautifully. We appreciate and love everybody that goes to decibelgeek.com, especially the people that buy their t-shirts. Talking about t-shirts.
Oh, man.
Have you seen the latest video from that awesome band that we love called A Rebel Few?
I have.
Holy shit.
And that powerful and attractive bass player they have.
Yeah, I mean, I knew they rocked, but I did not know they were so fashionable.
Very fashionable.
Bass player. In the official video of their brand new song, I implore you to go check it out.
I'll put a link in the show notes for you.
Yeah, most definitely do that because everybody's got to see this. That awesome bass player in that awesome band. I'm just like, this song is so good. Wait, what's that? Holy shit, that guy's wearing a Decibel Geek t-shirt.
As well as the guys in the another great Canadian band, Love Razor.
We've played Love Razor on the show.
Their singer Sydney Snow is wearing one of our shirts at one of their recent shows.
Lead singer of the band,
yeah.
Wearing it. Bass player in the official video.
Yeah, we
played
a great song by them called First Class Bitch.
Oh, man. Love Razor is awesome. Those guys are playing the kind of music that I love.
Me too.
You want to be cool like these guys? It's simple. Go to decibelgeek.com, order yourself up a t-shirt.
Very easy.
There's all different kinds of colors, designs. You can pretty much make it almost any way you want to, pretty much.
All kinds of designs.
Pick your colors, pick your design, and make it happen and wear it to a show and get your picture taken with rock stars. And we will share it on our website. We'll share it on our Facebook. We will show the world what an awesome rock and roll fan you are and what a good friend of the show you are while you're at decibelgeek.com. You noticed, I don't even need to tell you, there's articles there. There's articles written by rock and roll journalists that know what the hell's going on. They care about what's going on, and they support, and they help the music that we love shine. They do. They help it shine so the world can see it, you know, because sometimes it's not enough to hear it. There's bands out there putting out music right now that could be your new favorite band, but you will never know. How would you know? You're hanging out in your town, wherever you're at. You think, wonder if there's anything cool new in the world of rock and roll. Let me turn on my local rock station. Nope, same old shit. You're never going to find nothing new just hanging out. You go to decibelgeek.com, you read those reviews, the concerts, the albums, everything that's going on, the news stories. You know, some of our favorite bands right now got some crazy stuff going on, and it's being covered on Decibel Geek. Have you guys seen the Angels in Vain stuff?
Oh, boy.
Crazy. Crazy stuff. Read it and decide for yourselves.
VIP,
that's all we can
if you
say
really
about
want
that.
To hear a lot about
VIP, that. Yeah, we had a big long conversation about that on VIP just now. So yeah,
stuff that I can't say publicly.
Right? Yeah. No, the VIPs get to hear it.
They do.
So that's the beauty of becoming a VIP. Hey, speaking of becoming a VIP, it's really easy. We make it simple for you. There's all different kinds of levels. Everything from what, $1 a month?
Yeah.
A dollar a month will get you in the door. A little bit more than that will get you a little bit more. A little bit more than that will get you a little bit more. Pretty soon you're getting the Chris and Aaron show. You're getting things things like Farm Rock Adventures. You're getting Aaron Camaro calling wrestling matches live to tape. I mean, there's all kinds of cool, crazy extra stuff that the VIPs get that nobody else is privy to. And let me tell you, just based off this very last episode of the Chris and Aaron Show, if you're not a VIP, you are missing out. It's stuff I wish we could just talk about on the regular show, but that's for our friends. We share that stuff with our friends because we know they won't go around blabbing it.
All for the price of a cup of coffee.
You could help two sorry bastards sitting in an unair-conditioned studio sweating their asses off. You could help.
Children in Africa are great, but I'm not going to put myself ahead of that. I don't want to welcome that karma. I mean, never mind.
Although we are sweating as much as one of them children in the commercial right now.
Right.
But we're rocking our way through it.
But you're getting good sound quality out of it, and that's why we're doing it.
We suffer for you.
We do. Okay. But also,
speaking of all that, you know, you're already at decibelgeek.com. You're done commenting on Facebook. You know, everybody does that for fun, but when you want to get down to business, it's decibelgeek.com. Why? Well, for many reasons, but a big important one is right there at the top of the page. It is our official Amazon banner. You say, hey, Aaron and Chris, I shop on Amazon all the time. Why should I take the time to go to your website first and click on that banner when I could just go to Amazon just the regular old boring way? Why would you want to do that? Because if you go to our link, what you're doing is you're doing the same Amazon shopping. The same products are available to you. Everything's exactly the same, right down to how much you pay for whatever you're buying. Now, the beautiful thing about it is after you've made your purchase and paid the exact price that you knew you were going to pay for your product, no matter what it is, it could be anything. They, Amazon, because they love us and they love rock and roll, they want to help Decibel Geek out. So what they do is they take a piece of their action, not yours, theirs, and they kick it over to Decibel Geek Podcast. Why? Because you came through our website to go there. So now look back at the whole situation. You did your shopping. You got what you wanted, whether it was just on Amazon or through HK Collectibles, Inc. Now, when you made your purchase, you didn't pay anything extra. There's no hidden charges, no hidden fees, no bullshit whatsoever. And Amazon is helping us. So you're helping us be helped by Amazon. And it costs you nothing. Yep. And the beautiful thing about it is we get the super cool list every single week that tells us what's been bought through our link.
Yeah, and I'm a little late doing this, so I took what the last week because I've got other stuff going on. But
we said we weren't going to do it, but we're doing it anyway.
Well, I'm not doing the whole list of the last 3 weeks because it'll take me an hour to do
it. Oh, that's the next whole episode.
But no, you guys have done great, and we've had some pretty interesting stuff bought in the last week, including glare filters for LCD monitors and a Swiss Gear computer backpack. That's pretty cool.
Okay.
A Norpro tomato corer.
Tomato?
Did you know you could core a tomato?
Core a tomato. What? Do you need to core a tomato? Should we be coring our tomatoes?
Whoever bought the Norpro tomato corer apparently thinks so.
I trust people who shop through the Decibel Geek Podcast.
So thank you for buying that. I didn't know I needed it.
I'm going to get one too now.
Maybe I should.
I'm scared.
Maybe we should have a whole run on Norpro tomato corers on our website.
Maybe. We could be their number one.
They could be our sponsor.
They could be our sponsor.
Norpro.
That's it. Norpro.
Norpro presents Decibel Geek Podcast.
The weakest part of the tomato, it's got to go. It doesn't rock as much as the rest.
That's true. On DVD, somebody is an 80s movies fan because they bought Police Academy 1 through 7, the complete collection on Blu-ray.
Right on. That's awesome.
The Dream Team. That's a really underrated comedy. That's a good movie.
I remember that. Yeah. Oh, man. I got to go watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. Peter Boyle's hilarious in that movie. The Great Outdoors. That was one of my favorite movies
as a kid.
That's
another great one.
And The Money Pit, which is a hilarious movie with Tom Hanks in it.
Those are all hilarious movies right there.
Somebody has really good taste in movies.
Lips and assholes.
Just a couple of purchases this week. Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti was bought, and Black Sabbath's Sabbath Bloody Sabbath.
Well, that's not a whole lot of music on that list, but if you're going to make it count, that's the way to do it, because everybody should own those albums.
That's right.
Awesome. There you go. Now you guys got the rundown on everything we got going on, and I think you're ready to get back to 1974. But before we get into the rock and roll, let's talk about the movies in 1974, because there were some really good ones that came out that year. Let's start with the top 10. At number 10 of the top grossing movies of 1974, Benji.
I was a huge fan of that movie as a child.
Yeah. These are all kind of movies that I think people our age or close to it probably remember seeing when VHS came out.
And I remember being at the video store and begging my parents every time we go to the video store to rent Benji for me.
Yeah?
And them rolling their eyes going, we really have to watch fucking
Benji again.
So, yeah.
You kids don't know nothing about dogs. When I was young, we had Lassie, Benji.
And Ren Tin Tin.
Yeah.
Benji was good back in the day.
Coming in at number 9, The Longest Yard.
That's a good movie.
Classic.
Much better than the Sandler version.
I don't know. The Sandler version was pretty good. Yeah. But you can't beat Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds is the best.
Yeah, he is. Number 8, Life and Times of Grizzly Adams.
Never saw it.
Number 7, Airport, 1975.
George Kennedy.
Yeah, that was a disaster movie.
There was a lot of those back then.
Yeah, we'll see another one coming up on this list. Number 6, The Godfather Part 2.
Yep.
Classics. Number 5, here's another disaster movie, Earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
This, we got that one in the sky, one on the ground. Number 4, one of probably the greatest movies of all time, maybe one of the funniest, most definitely, Young Frankenstein.
Oh, I love that movie.
Oh, man. That movie stands the test of time. I can put that on right now, and I don't know how many times I've seen it in my life, more than a few, but it'll make me laugh every time.
Even just for the scene with him and with Peter Boyle and Gene Hackman with the fire. That alone is one of the best parts of movie history.
It makes me laugh just thinking about it. All right, so at number 3, this one was weird. I had to look this up a little bit and see what it was. The Trial of Billy Jack. Do you know anything about that?
I've heard of it, but I don't think I've ever watched it.
It was a series of movies back in the day based on this badass dude named Billy Jack. And I think he was a Native American who stood up for the rights of hippies.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't afraid to kill people that messed with hippies.
So it was Charles Manson.
Maybe. Yeah. So he had his own movie. Another disaster movie in 1974, The Towering Inferno.
Man, people were paranoid in 1974.
Yeah. I mean, but otherwise maybe things were going so good in 74 that they had to manufacture some fear and some crisis.
We live in a time now where you get it in real life.
And the number one movie in 1974, another one, probably you'd have to put this right up there with the funniest movies of all freaking time. Blazing Saddles.
Would not be released nowadays.
Oh, no.
Politically incorrect.
That's funny. You think about something like that and say, oh, it was before its time. No, it was just at the right time. There was a small window there for stuff like that.
People still had a...
And that was 1974. That's like all the racial stuff kind of died down there for a minute before it all ramped back up. And that was the only time you could release that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarious, though. Other movies released in 1974, the first Death Wish. Mm-hmm. Those are classics. Foxy Brown. We heard the commercial for that in part one.
I love that commercial.
That was awesome. The classic Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla.
Oh, of course. Yeah, everyone's seen that one.
You know, sitting right next to Benji on the racks at the VHS stores many years later, Herbie Rides Again.
I wanted a Volkswagen just for that reason.
This fucking thing don't work. It ain't driving itself nowhere. It has no personality. What the hell's going on here? You sold me a piece of garbage.
Yep, bait and switch.
I want a living car. Also in 74, The Man with the Golden Gun, some 007. Mm-hmm. My favorite James Bond, the Roger Moore James Bond. He was my dude.
Oh, okay.
I liked him the best, still to this day. Of course, then we got the 9 Lives of Fritz the Cat.
I never saw that.
No, you've never seen that?
Never seen
Fritz. Oh, man. Chris, you got to see that.
Maybe
you got to see that
VIP
movie.
Thing of commentary on Fritz the Cat.
We should do that because it's been forever since I've seen it, but you've got to see it. And in 1974, the very first installment, probably the craziest one of them all, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
The Tobey Hooper classic.
That's a scary movie because
it's a very scary movie.
It's like a horror movie that's kind of mixed with a reality show almost because the way it's filmed, it all seems very real and very likely easy to happen to any poor, hapless people that would fall into a situation like
that. The fact that it's so cheaply filmed just adds to how scary it is.
Yeah, that really does. It really does.
It was on one Halloween night. I got my wife to watch it with me, and she got about 20 minutes in and she's like, I can't deal with it. I was like, what? She's like, it's just too fucking scary. So we had to turn it off.
Like, hang on, let's put it in part two. It's way funnier.
Yeah. I was like, the saddest part is this is the best one. Everything else after kind of sucked. Okay, so we're into September now.
Yeah.
And the next news story on September 1st, this has a bit of a personal connection to me. The SR-71 Blackbird sets and holds the record for flying from New York to London in 1 hour 54 minutes and 56.4 seconds.
Wow.
The reason this has a personal connection is my father, a military policeman, when my parents first got married around 1969 and when they first moved into Florida around 1970, the Blackbird was a brand new plane.
Mm-hmm.
And it was stationed at Eglin Air Force Base where my dad was stationed. And my dad was one of the first people to ever guard the SR-71 Blackbird.
Nice.
And he used to love telling the story about how he snuck my mom in to actually get to sit in it one night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, while he was guarding it. But yeah, it was, if you guys hadn't, because it's out of commission now. It's been out of commission for like 15 years.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, you need to go on Google and look up pictures of this thing, because it's one of the coolest looking planes ever created. It is such a cool looking, it looks like a damn, like an alien space plane. It's just so
nice.
Cool. And it for
and fast.
For decades, it was the fastest plane on the planet.
That's very cool,
yeah.
Man. Heck yeah.
Oh, September 15th, Gary Thane from Uriah Heep is shocked on stage at the Moody Coliseum in Dallas, Texas, and is seriously injured. So see, Kiss can't do anything originally.
Well, I mean,
even rip off electrocutions.
Ace Frehley wasn't the first.
Yep. Right. And then he went on to write this.
He stole Gary Thane's gimmick.
He wrote this song called I Got Shocked, and then, you know, the rest is history. Is heapstery.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
Well, I guess that rocks us into September, so that brings us up to a very important moment in rock and roll history. I'm talking about the 1974 debut album by Judas Priest. But, you know, it's not really that much of a Priest album at all if you listen to it. At least not the way we imagine Judas Priest today. Instead, what you get is KK Downing, Ian Hill, and drummer John Hinch with two brand new members to the band by the names of Rob Halford and Glenn Tipton. They're basically reworking and recording a lot of songs by the former frontman and band originator Al Atkins. And this guy had a totally different vision of what the band was going to become.
Yeah.
And it was way different than what we've come to know and love. So Rockarola gets little love or attention upon its release, and even with the notoriety of famous Sabbath producer Roger Bain, it doesn't do nothing. You know, the songs, they're just not, we know Priest, we love Priest, and this is not Priest. I mean, look at this, songs rejected from the album, The Ripper, Victim of Changes, and Tyrant.
I love The Ripper.
Right, those are songs that I consider Judas Priest classics. There's not a whole lot on this album that you would really consider to be a Priest classic. It's not a good representation of the band.
I'm not a fan of this album.
No, but it is a nice snapshot of the times and their weird hippie clothes they were wearing back then.
Yeah, Rob looked interesting in this era.
You know, but it showed potential. I mean, if you don't look at it as a Priest album, there's actually some pretty good stuff on there.
It's
you
good
know?
For what it is, but yeah, it's definitely not what they would become. Although no. Al Atkins did write Victim of Changes. So
yeah, he wrote a lot of that stuff off that first album. And, yeah. You know, it does show the potential to maybe someday become metal gods.
Yeah, but yeah. It's kind of an interesting snapshot of where they were at the time.
Most definitely.
So my next pick, the Raspberries on September 16th release, Starting Over, their fourth studio album. The album only peaked at 143 on Billboard. It generated a number 18 hit with Overnight Sensation. John Lennon, who was a Raspberries fan, particularly liked that song. He was present for part of the recording of the album, and although he's not credited on the LP, is said to have assisted in the mix, including Overnight Sensation.
John Lennon's all over the place in 1974.
Big music fan. While that's a cool little factoid, I dislike that song, and I chose to spin this tune instead. It's called I Don't Know What I Want.
I
So that album contains a bit more of an arena sound, but also a lot of more softer ballads, which Eric Carmen would become later known for doing a lot more ballad
yes,
stuff.
Yes, he would.
But, yeah, that was kind of the end of the line for the Raspberries.
Yeah. 74 is a weird year for a lot of upheaval and changes in bands and stuff, but, you know, we're on the cusp of some really cool stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Ronnie Wood started his rock and roll career back in England in the 60s as a member of the Byrds. No, not the California Mr. Tambourine spelled with a Y Byrds. These were the ones from the UK that was actually spelled correctly. And then in 1967, he becomes the bass player in the Jeff Beck Group and is on the Truth and Beckola albums.
Great albums.
Yeah. So from there, you know, he helps form the Faces with Rod Stewart and members of the Small Faces.
Love him.
After releasing four albums, he begins to collaborate with the Rolling Stones, but by 1974, Ronnie Wood's just got to say, I've got my own album to do.
Literally.
Because that's the name of the album. I've got my own album to do. Poor guy. Everybody's coming to him going, hey, come play on this. Come help me write that. You know, in return for helping him write and record It's Only Rock and Roll, But I Like It. Both Keith Richards and Mick Jagger appear on the album, along with Mick Taylor, George Harrison, Rod Stewart, and David Bowie. This guy's popular.
I have to check this album out because I've never listened to it.
It's weird.
Is it weird?
It's weird. Let me tell you, it's got appearances by George Harrison, Rod Stewart, and David Bowie. It's weird. But there is some pretty cool stuff on there, too. Shortly after recording this album, Ronnie would replace Taylor as the second guitarist in the Stones, and there he would stay.
Absolutely.
But he's come out with other solo stuff over the years and appeared on God knows how many albums with other people over the years, but he's the guy, man. He's the dude in the Stones.
Absolutely.
Heck yeah, I like it.
And then if you haven't picked up the Small Faces stuff, that's really worth your time because
yeah.
It's amazing rock music. Okay, so we're into October now.
Talking about bands, you know, big cusps of changes in rock and roll, things that are really going to bode big for the future.
Yeah, October 5th was a big day because AC/DC performs its first official show with Bon Scott as its new singer.
And the world changes for the better. Yeah.
The Alice Cooper Band officially breaks up.
Right. But Alice Cooper, Vince Fernier,
goes on to
keeps the name.
Solo success.
Yeah. Meets up with Bob Ezrin and goes on to do all kinds of cool stuff with Dick Wagner.
Dick Wagner and
the rest of the band, they end up forming the Billion Dollar Babies and do their thing. You know, and nowadays there's still a lot of big call for people that would want what's left of that band to reunite, you know, which they kind of did on Welcome to My Nightmare.
Well, and Alice said that they're writing together for the next Alice album.
Nice.
Not necessarily the whole thing, but They're at least going to do a few songs.
Kind of like they did on the other one.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. I like that. Very good.
So on October 11th, Montrose releases Paper Money, their second studio album. It would be their final recording with Sammy Hagar. And produced by Ted Templeman, this album is not nearly as good as the debut. And the songs are weaker as well as the production, but the album ends on a high note with the title track.
I play the game of a rich boy. I buy everything I can. My bankroll is a foot thick. I'm a wealthy man. $1 million reserve note is right there in my hand. And I can't stand the thing. Well, it's all that I got. Take away all my
course, Sammy would see the writing was on the wall because Ronnie decided to go soft rock, basically, to try to get commercial success. But they never equaled that first Montrose record, which is a classic.
See, and that's kind of the thing you're seeing in 1974, where with a lot of these year reviews we do, there's a good change and a good flux going on where, like, the bands like Mountain and Foghat and these other bands that are kind of over their peak right now coming down are making room for bands like Kiss and Aerosmith and, you know, bands like that to come in and explode.
Well, and don't get me wrong, there's, I can't remember the name of the song, there's a song on that Montrose record that even sounds kind of Sabbath-y, but the majority of it is them trying to be real commercial, and it doesn't work. And I mean, Sammy was smart to leave that band, honestly.
Yeah, for his own career, for sure. All right, well, here's one for you. Here's something completely different than that. Here's a band, they're UK favorites, not really that well known in the States. We know them here on the Decibel Geek podcast. I'm talking about the sensational Alex Harvey Band.
Right, man.
These guys have been shocking audiences since 1964 and are still going strong a decade later with their seventh studio album, The Impossible Dream.
I can't get enough, I can't get enough, I can't get enough, I can't get enough.
This is another example of a band that's virtually unknown in the U.S., but very appreciated in the U.K. and in Europe. Wait, except for in Cleveland, Ohio. The sensational Alex Harvey Band in 1974, the Kings of Cleveland, Ohio.
My.
They play a show at the Agora Ballroom, and after that, the local rock station, WMMS, is just flooded with requests to play the band's music on the radio, because just like they did in Europe, they're shocking people. They're blowing minds. They come to Cleveland, they blow people away.
I got
to
give Cleveland credit. Because, I mean, Cleveland broke Rush.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's another example of how in tune with rock music Cleveland is.
Well, even especially back then when they had places like the Agora Ballroom. Mm-hmm. And that's a very, very important place throughout the history of rock and roll, of the kind of bands that we like to talk about here on Decibel Geek. That place is very historic and has showcased many of our favorite bands that we've played on here and broke a lot of them, too, like in the case with Sensational Alex Harvey Band. Very cool stuff, man. Very underrated. I think people should go back and check it out because, you know, we kind of make fun of the U.S. versus U.K. thing in 1974, but that's one where the U.K. definitely had something that we were missing. Well, it was above our heads in 74.
Yeah, and Alex Harvey died really young, so I mean, like, there's no telling what kind of output he could have had he lived longer, you know.
But there was bands in the U.S. like, I don't know, Kiss, seeing a little something out of that band and going,
Gene Z and the bass player going, I could dress like that guy in about 10 years. just look at the videos. That's
Where'd you get that wig?
Yeah. All right, so on October 18th, this is a weird story. Al Green is attacked in the shower by his girlfriend. She scalds his body with a pan of boiling grits and commits suicide a few moments later.
What?
How fucked up is that?
Now, hold on a second, baby. I know you got a big old pan of hot grits right there, baby, but listen to me. Don't throw that shit at me.
You ain't singing Let's Stay Together after that shit.
That's some kind of crazy party gone wrong right there.
That is crazy. I mean, and he wound up leaving music and becoming a preacher not long after all this.
Well, imagine, you know, I'm guessing probably drugs and alcohol involved.
Most likely.
You know, 1974 we're talking about.
He was probably living the life. And, I saw that in the research and I was like, well, we have to mention this.
Yeah, because it's insane.
Because that's insane.
You should never play with a pan of boiling grits.
Probably a bad idea.
But you know what was fun to play with in 1974? The most metal of all toys ever. Tonka trucks.
Yes, because they doubled as weapons.
They totally did. You could kill somebody with a Tonka
truck. Oh, I whacked a few kids over the head with them.
Like, if we were caught in the zombie apocalypse, I would want a pickaxe, a crossbow, and a Tonka dump truck. Because you could do a lot of damage with that.
Made from solid steel with lots of pointy edges.
Yeah.
They were so unsafe for children, it wasn't even funny.
I never knew nobody that accidentally got hurt with them.
No, it was always intentional.
Also in 1974, popular toys, the Magic 8-Ball is huge in 74. The Hasbro Inchworm, it was a riding toy. You guys know what I'm talking about.
I had one of those too.
The classic kids doctor kit, the little plastic suitcase with the little stethoscope in it and had all the little doctor's tools in it.
Yep.
Kids started playing doctor in 1974.
Yeah, they did.
You played the commercial for it in the first episode, the Odyssey electronic game. That was pretty far ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Twister is big in 1974. There's a lot of board games that are really big in 74. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, because there are really no video games already, except for maybe that weird Odyssey thing.
Yeah.
So it's all board games. So in 74, the biggest things that you can get, Battleship, Scrabble, mm-hmm. Stratego, Risk, Sorry, Clue, mm-hmm. and the Game of Life.
Yep.
Those are the freaking games right there.
Played many times, every one of those.
Missing maybe, what, Monopoly?
Well, I mean, Monopoly's been big since the 30s.
Other than Monopoly, those are the biggest board games of all time right there.
Pretty much.
And it was happening in 1974.
Yeah, I've played all of those.
Also, cool thing to note on this, in 1974, in a small town in Wisconsin, Dungeons & Dragons were created.
Because what else are you going to do when it's fucking 6 feet of snow outside?
Right. Also, the Rubik's Cube invented in 1974.
I gotcha.
Heck yeah.
So, let's see. We're in October, and for Kiss fans, it's now the moment you've been waiting for the next album.
It's a special treat to be doing 1974 as a Kiss fan, because we get two Kiss albums.
Yes, Hotter Than Hell is released on October 22nd. It's Kiss's second studio album, recorded at Village Recorder in the dumpster out back. Produced horribly by Kenny Garner and Richie Wise.
Man, so good though.
I hate to talk shit about it, but I'm just being honest. This, in spite of the production though, the band delivers, in my opinion, one of their best albums.
I think so. That's the beautiful thing about it. They overcome the shitty production.
They absolutely did. The production on this album is horrid. I don't care what anyone says. It was a failed experiment. They wanted to sound like Black Sabbath, and they dropped the ball.
Yeah.
And from what I think I've heard, and this goes back to like interviews I heard years ago, I think I remember somebody, maybe Wise or Kerner, saying that they had done something with the master tapes to try to make it sound Sabbathy with kind of a sludgy distortion. But they did it in a way to where they put the effect on, didn't like it, but couldn't go back and change it.
Oh, no.
And that's why it sounds the way that it does. Like, it was something they did that they couldn't undo.
Yeah, like an accident.
If only they had Audacity back in those days.
Just hit the back button.
Yeah,
why didn't they just hit the back button a couple of times? Yeah, jeez.
But it's still a classic Kiss album, loaded with tons of material, and including new material as well as some stuff refurbished from the Wicked Lester days. And the album also includes my favorite Ace Frehley pin tune, a song called Parasite. Of course, Kiss would go back into the studio a few months later to work with Neil Bogart as producer for Dressed to Kill on an album that sounded a lot better, but I would say this album had a lot more strong material than that
one. Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about that album. Yeah, you're absolutely right. The production is horrible. But the songs shine through
the
it. They really do.
Absolutely.
Gotta love it, man. Kiss doubled up in 1974. What a great year.
Absolutely.
I mean, any year that you can get two Kiss albums, it's got to be one of the greatest years ever.
I wish we could do that again.
Yeah, no kidding.
We're talking about doing a new one.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
With Ace and Peter?
No.
Oh.
With Vinny Vincent? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you better quit with all that. All right, we're going to keep rocking. Here's something that's way different than Kiss. This is way different than what Kiss has got going on in 74. This year in review has been pretty cool because it's almost been like a tribute to albums that my dad had in the house when I was a little bitty kid.
Yeah.
I know this one here got a lot of spins in my young parents' home when I was little. Talking about the Ozark Mountain Daredevils, It'll Shine When It Shines. Here's something you may not know. Originally, they were named Cosmic Corn Cob and his amazing Ozark Mountain Daredevils. They decided to shorten that.
I'm glad they did.
Probably because
Cosmic Corn Cob wouldn't work.
There ain't nothing cool about Cosmic Corn Cob.
Sounds like a sex toy.
It does. We should invent that and sell it on DecibelGeek.com. There you go, the Cosmic Corn Cob.
10 inches long.
Inspired by the Ozark Mountain Daredevils. Jump on.
Jump on. I like that.
In 1974, they're riding the wave of the popularity of their debut album and the big hit single, If You Want to Get to Heaven. Dun-dun-dun. You got to raise a little hell. And they return with this one. It's a pretty great album. You know, with Ozark Mountain Daredevils, man, to me, it's pretty nostalgic because it's stuff that I heard over and over and over when I was a little kid. And to hear this stuff, it makes me feel good. Of course, the big, big, huge hit single off that album, Jackie Blue.
Yep.
Song originally written about doing drugs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Almost left off the album. It reaches number 3 on the U.S. singles
charts.
That'd
be an interesting topic to look into. How many songs that became hits were ones that were like last-minute additions to
like
albums?
Like More Than Words, like Extreme? Yeah, yeah, for sure.
What songs they thought were throwaways.
Yeah, see? And we've already seen two of those at least today.
It happens a lot.
And it's like, okay, we'll bring us back one more song, that's poppy. Well, here's this. We weren't going to put it on. That's a hit.
Yep, and it becomes a massive hit.
Yeah. This is 74, so it is the height of popularity for the Southern Rockers from Missouri, Ozark Mountain Daredevils.
That's cool.
I like them. I know it's weird, but I like them a lot.
Speaking of hits, a lot of hits are being dished out on October 30th. Muhammad Ali knocks out George Foreman in the 8th round in Kinshasa, Zaire.
The Rumble in the Jungle.
The Rumble in the Jungle.
See, I knew it. We were talking about that in part one, and I was like, I think there was some kind of big boxing thing that happened.
That was a big one.
And that was it. One of the biggest boxing matches of all time.
Absolutely. And before we go into the second break, I got my next pick here. There's an album that came out in 1974 called The Mirror, and it's an album by a British band called Spooky Tooth. This was the first Spooky Tooth album to be released without contributions from Mike Harrison. It was also their last album for nearly 25 years, which they eventually put out an album called Cross Purpose in 1999. It was released in October of 74, 1 month after the group members had permanently disbanded. They went on to form such bands as Foreigner and The Only Ones. While their main claim to fame is the connection to Judas Priest's cover of Better By You, Better Than Me, and the unfortunate fallout from the court case, you'll hear some great music from their albums.
Butter. Butter.
Parquet.
Margarine. The big 1 pound bowl.
Butter.
Parquet. I use the bowls for leftovers and things.
Butter.
Parquet. Mmm! Light, creamy. Butter.
Parquet.
Isn't that what I said?
Parquet margarine in the 1 pound bowl from Kraft. The flavor says butter.
Oh, I'd know that tongue anywhere. What a sound. Maybe it's only rock and roll, but I like it.
You'll like it too. The latest release from the Rolling Stones, It's Only Rock and Roll, on Rolling Stones Records and Tapes.
That brings us into November of 1974. We're rocking pretty hard so far. All this has been really good. In 74, after losing Michael Schenker to UFO, Klaus Meine and Rudy Schenker are forced to regroup. They merge with the band Dawn Road, featuring Uli John Roth, but they keep the Scorpions name and return to the studio to create a follow-up to 1972's Lonesome Crow. They're looking for a harder sound than what they achieved on the debut, and the result is 1974's Fly to the Rainbow. I love that Uli John Roth stuff, huh?
I love the music.
That era.
Have you seen the album cover?
The album cover's retarded.
It's terrible.
Yeah,
even the band hates it.
Yeah, I know. I think I read something where Uli John Roth, they said, can you explain that? He's like, I don't know.
I can't.
I didn't like it then. I don't like it now. Like I think it's stupid.
It's like a monkey wearing a welder's mask on top of a plane.
On top of like a couple of little planes.
Yeah.
Like he's giant, but they're
holding
little.
Holding a flag that says Fly to the Rainbow.
It's so weird.
It's such a bizarre cover. Oh, man. Speaking of bizarre, on November 13th, the Amityville Horror murders take place.
Yeah.
The DeFeo family.
Right. And that in turn creates the haunted story of the house and
the movies and books and all that shit.
There's a lot of controversy with that. I tried to do a little research on that to try
Did
to
you?
Talk about it, but you really can't say anything about it because everything's kind of weird and up in the air about it.
There's one weird Kiss tie-in that some people wonder about.
Really?
They were playing around the time that these murders took place was around the time that Kiss was playing at the Daisy in Amityville.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Which
okay.
was a club out there. And that club was literally like a mile away from where the house is. And Ronald DeFeo, the one that killed his family, I think it's kind of well known he was a big rock and roll fan.
Yeah.
It's very possible that Ronald DeFeo was at some of those Kiss shows.
That would make sense.
How creepy is that?
That's weird. Wow.
Maybe Kiss caused him to go over the edge. No, I'm just kidding. So, on November 8th, Thin Lizzy comes out with Nightlife, their fourth studio album produced by Ron Nevison and Phil Lynott. Of course, Ron Nevison, Kiss fans will know from Crazy Nights, and Ozzy fans will know from Bark at the Moon.
Yeah.
This was the first album with the Scott Gorham and Brian Robertson lineup, which was considered by many the classic lineup of the band. This song, composed solely by Phil, shows the new path the band was headed in, and this is a song called It's Only Money.
You don't believe-
It's Only Money would wind up being covered about 35 years later by Robbo on one of his solo albums. And this Nightlife is an interesting album in their career because it's a strange thing because Scott Gorham, I think, has even mentioned in interviews where like one song would be kind of a rockier song with good solos, and the next thing would be this laid-back jazzy thing. And he's like, what the fuck kind of band are we supposed to be?
There's a lot of that going on in 74. We've seen that with a lot of these bands so far where there was back
it's like
then
transitional.
Back then there was a lot of filler on albums, it seems like.
Yeah.
You know, more than like other eras of music where it's like you really wanted to bang it all out and have every song be good. But in the 70s, like the early 70s, like these bands are coming out with albums where it's like there's three or four really great songs on here and the rest of it's all really kind of weird and strange and doesn't sound like what you'd expect.
Right.
As is kind of the case with this next one. I'm talking about the originators of the dual guitar harmony attack. Yeah, they're back in 1974. I'm talking about Wishbone Ash.
Yep.
And they're coming back with their fifth studio album, and it's called There's the Rub. This is a band that's kind of, they're doing things different too. They're kind of flirting with prog rock a little bit on this album, as most of the tracks on the album are over 6 minutes long. It's an underrated album by an underrated band, and There's the Rub features rockin' tunes like Lady J, Silver Shoes, that classic, Fucked Up Beyond Belief, and Don't Come Back. Reaches 88 in the US, number 16 in the UK, and kind of marks the beginning of a sliding in popularity for the band. And, you know, they really, after that, kind of dropped off a little bit, but they remained relevant enough to release 24 studio albums over the years.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's only been a couple years since they had their last one.
That's pretty incredible.
So Wishbone Ash, you thought they died in 74? No.
Still doing it.
They've been around this whole time and are still out there doing it somewhere.
That's awesome.
Heck yeah.
So on November 22nd, Helen Morgan resigns the Miss World title.
This is the first woman to ever have to resign the title of Miss World. Now, she started out in the UK, and then she went through everything and won the whole Miss World competition.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found out her deep, dark secret. She's an unwed mother.
Oh, yeah?
All that. She had to resign her crown in 1974 because she was an unwed mother.
Wow.
The shame.
Boy, things have changed.
Yeah, no kidding. So different.
That is wild.
That is wild. How conservative.
And then on November 28th, John Lennon joins Elton John on stage at Madison Square Garden for three songs. It would be his last stage performance ever.
Wow, man. 74, I'm glad John Lennon was out there having a good time in 1974 because it's like he comes up in every other news story.
Yeah, he was around, you know, getting thrown out of clubs and going to concerts. Okay,
right
so...
Right there to laugh when Nixon had to resign.
Yeah. Aha. I've got a couple more picks. Slade came out with Slade in Flame on November 29th. It was a soundtrack album to the film of the same name that came out. Went to number 6 on the UK charts. The album was a bit of a departure as the movie was about a fictional 60s band, so they were kind of aiming for that sound. For 20 odd years, I've taken everything that's bad. For 20 odd years, I've wanted things I've never had.
So far, so
some cool songs on the album, like that one there, So Far So Good. That was a bit of a departure, but Slade, man, had a big year in 74, a lot of chart success.
Yeah, very cool, man. I like Slade. Yeah. All right, we're almost to the end here in 1974, but man, you know, much like Kiss, here's a double dose of the new Deep Purple in 1974 when the band follows up their June release of Burn. That's awesome. They're back in November with Stormbringer. For a band that many had doomed to fail with the loss of Ian Gillan and Roger Glover, they're on one hell of a roll creating albums that are arguably as good as, if not better than, what the classic lineup had been doing.
Yep.
There are so many great songs on this album that I would just basically read you the entire track listing if I was to list them all. I feel like this album is just a must-have for all rock fans. Glenn Hughes and David Coverdale leading the charge, this album goes to number 6 in the UK, number 20 in the US, number 2 in Norway. The party wouldn't last long for these guys, though, man. They had a good year in 1974 with this lineup. I'm glad they knocked it all out in one year, because very soon this band is going to undergo another one of their well-known huge lineup changes with the departure of Ritchie Blackmore. Can you imagine?
No.
Ritchie Blackmore leaving Deep Purple? That makes no sense. But it happens.
Crazy stuff.
74 was a good year for those guys, though. But, you know, the funny thing about this always is, and we do this every single time, yeah, we've talked a lot of good music here in the last couple of weeks when we were doing these year in review shows for 1974. But as always, you think it was all good?
No, it was not.
Let's look at the top five songs.
Let's listen to what the sheep liked.
Of 1974. At number 5, you got George McRae with Rock Your Baby.
I don't even remember this song.
I was just going to ask, do you even know what that is?
Nope.
It must be one of those, if they played it, we'd be like, oh yeah. Bleh.
Maybe.
At number 4, Stevie Miller Band with The Joker. That's all right.
Was good that year, I'm sure, popular. But after 3,000 listens, not so much.
Yeah. Of course, in 1974, I mean, there's not a whole lot bigger than it. ABBA with Waterloo, the number 3 song of the year pretty much everywhere.
I like some ABBA.
Here's another one that I don't know. This one came from the UK in 1974, a band called Mud, and a tune called Tiger Feet.
I don't know this one at all.
No Tiger Feet? I don't know that either. This has got to be another one that if they played it, we'd be like, oh, yeah.
Spotify and listen to it.
Oh, that song. And the number one song of 1974, pretty much anywhere in the world you go, there is no song more well-written, more well-performed, or well-received than Carl Douglas's Kung Fu Fighting.
I loved it as a kid, though.
Of course, as a kid, it's great.
I thought it was a great song as a kid. Now it's incredibly racist.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I never really thought about that, but yeah, you're right.
Those cats were fast as lightning, man.
Good stuff, 1974. You thought it was all good? Not so much, you know. There was some pretty bad stuff going on in 74, too. But you know what? Looking at this list of the top songs of 74... it's not that bad.
Mm-mm.
I mean, even the bad songs aren't that bad. Kung Fu Fighting, I can deal with that.
They at least have a charm because they're so old now.
Maybe that's what it is.
That's probably what it is.
Because, I mean, you look at the list, I don't see anything on here that I absolutely just despise.
Not really.
But if we were doing, like, 94, there'd be all kinds of stuff on that list that would make me want to throw up. than Rather Here.
Right.
So 74, you know what?
It's been a fun year to cover.
It wasn't all good, but it wasn't all bad either.
No, it's been fun to visit it, and of course this is before my time. I wasn't even born yet.
Right, me either.
But yeah, it's been a lot of fun to cover, and I hope you guys have gotten some information out of it, some education out of it, and some entertainment out of it.
And if you did, go ahead and share it.
Please do.
You know, or retweet it, or leave us a 5-star iTunes review, or buy a t-shirt from us, or...
all that good stuff.
Support our writers that are out there, you know, just help us out, because this is a lot of work, but we enjoy doing it because we know you enjoy it so much.
We have sweat equity into this show.
Quite literally tonight.
Especially right now.
Wow.
Okay, so I have the playout song, and Geordie, their second studio album, came out by this British glam band in sometime in 74. I don't know when.
That's one of the weird things. Like, you don't know a whole
sometimes
lot about
Geordie. Sometimes they don't have dates on release dates. This band was formed in 1972, and they had a rather unremarkable career. They did, however, have a very remarkable singer.
Oh, yeah.
And he sounds great on this track. This is Geordie featuring Brian Johnson, closing out 1974. With Going Down, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.
I'm going down to St. James Infirmary to see my